When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome sales event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome sales event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome back to the second guest show. Mike Dottillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're at the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi on our Christmas Eve show. We'll be on until 8 o'clock tonight. And remember, tomorrow we got wall-to-wall football. Once it cranks up, doubleheader right here on the Big 870. WWL, and also free on the Odyssey app. On our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, he covers the Las Vegas Raiders for the Las Vegas Review Journal, Adam Hill. Adam, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was thinking maybe when you're giving the Pelicans a health update, you should list the healthy players. That was a long list of injuries.
No, Adam, it'd have been a lot shorter. It'd have been a lot shorter to list that deal. But, yeah, we've been going through that basically the entire year with the Pelicans and the Saints. I mean, it's to see who got the longer injury list between the two of them. But the way this season has kind of mapped out for the Raiders, you got to win Sunday and everything, but – you know, we were talking about this, the disparity now, and I can't remember this over the past 6-8 years, this much kind of big drawback between the really good teams and the really bad teams in this league. And listen, I got to consider the Saints and the Raiders, two of them, in that really bad situation where, you know, you're going to pick either 8 or 11 or 12 for the Saints. The Raiders will pick either, what, 5, 6, or 7. And so it's an amazing kind of run in the NFL that how much we watch in the NFC North with three teams that might have 12 wins or more. In the NFC South, it's almost like pick them, you know, who's going to eventually end up being the champ.
Yeah, it's crazy, and I think if you really look at it, like every year, especially with this expanded playoff field, it goes down to the last week with like 6-7 teams fighting for the last two spots. Not going to happen this year. Like, we basically know the playoff field right now. There's a couple of spots that are still available, but you know, for the most part, it's the haves and the have-nots, and we haven't seen that in quite a while in the NFL. And certainly, the Raiders are a have-not right now. There's not much question about that. This is just not a good football team. Although, you know, the team you'll see coming in on Sunday is a team that, despite all the losses, they haven't, like, quit. They haven't given up. They haven't been blown out ever in these games. So they're fighting to the end, and you saw that on Sunday with the win over Jacksonville. Although, you know, that team I watched Sunday in Jacksonville was not a good team either. So they're in that mix as well. But the Raiders haven't been blown out, so I think that's a good sign for them that they're at least fighting.
You know, Adam, obviously, when you look at it, I mean, I'm a Josh Jacobs fan, and he was the bell cow, I mean, a bell cow type running back. Does the Raiders have that kind of individual? I know they're looking for, Zamir White to be that guy.
Yeah.
But has there been anyone? Now, that's a tall task to say you can live up to Josh Jacobs. But sure. In hindsight, it's like, boy, look what he means to the Packers. And what have the Raiders done to address that?
Yeah, like Zamir White was the guy that they really wanted to take on that role. A guy obviously very productive in college down in the SEC at Georgia. They wanted him to step up. He wanted to be the heir apparent to Josh Jacobs. The problem is like they tried to fit a square peg into a round hole. They changed the blocking scheme, and it really just wasn't one that fit what Zamir White does well at all. And they were trying to ask him to fit into it, and it never was going to work. And it was just a disaster early in the season, really. And, you know, they found some success a little bit here and there with Alexander Mattison. But, you know, we know what he is. He's been around the league for a few years with the Vikings. Amir Abdullah, a veteran, he's not going to be the future, certainly at the position, but he's given him a little lift in terms of the passing game, but he's not going to be an every down running back type guy. They just haven't been able to do that. They actually did for a couple weeks, found a kid in Sincere McCormick, who's a really, really good player, down from, UTSA, everybody kind of thought, why isn't he getting a chance? He's such an explosive player. Maybe he can't fit into the passing game. Maybe he can't pass block. But he came in and he did really well in all areas. And it looked like for a couple of weeks, they had a guy that was going to be that, you know, that bell cow guy who could play all three downs and be the running back of the future. And then he suffers a severe ankle injury, basically in his second start, and then it's gone. So, you know, you talked about the injuries. It's kind of gone that way for the Raiders. But I think they did find something in Sincere McCormick. It was just they only had him for 2 weeks.
Adam, one of the things, if he was playing in, say, a major city and you winning, Brock Bowers, we saw him at Georgia. He was a dominant tight end, so athletic, could catch the ball well. And really, his play is just that dominant in the NFL.
Yeah, it seems like he's lived up to those expectations.
You talk about a big-time guy. That's one piece of the puzzle offensively they have right in Las Vegas.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's no question. He's going to set every record there is for rookies. I mean, he's going to break Puka Nacua's, you know, reception record. He's not going to break the receiving yards record, but everything else he's going to break, and all the tight end records he's definitely going to break. He's just been that good. And right away, everybody kind of knew that first practice when he stepped on the field minicamp, like, oh, this guy is something different. I will say, though, you said if he was in a big city, he'd be getting a lot more attention, a lot more hype. That's not him. I don't know if he'd fit in that way. Like, he wants to just go to work, play football, and go home, and that's it. Like, he doesn't want to talk about himself. He doesn't want to hype himself up. He hates that. He hates the spotlight. He's a guy that, you know, would love it if he just, you know, played football and didn't have to talk to people and went home. And he's very nice. You know, I'll say this. He kind of tried to put on a hat and sneak out of the locker room the other day after breaking some receiving records. And, you know, he obviously got caught and, you know, had to talk to the media. But he'd much rather have everybody else get the attention, get the hype, and he just goes about his business. That's just kind of who he is. You know, I asked Antonio Pierce 2 weeks ago, how did you finally break the ice with Brock? Like, how did you finally get him to open up and, you know, get to know him a little bit? And he said, I still haven't. It just hasn't happened. He's just not a spotlight guy. He's just a really, really good football player.
Now, Adam, speaking of being a really good football player, I mean, I think the NFL, and you follow football, you recognize Max Crosby. I think he's up there with T.J. Watt and the Boses or whoever you think's the best of the best. To me, that's the player that, you know, you hail when you're well and when you can play, but that motor, high motor he has, that he not only would start for every team, but he would be a dominant fixture on that organization.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, he suffered an injury week two against Baltimore, and he just hasn't been the same. And week three, he tried to gut through it and really didn't play well. It was as bad as anybody's seen Max Crosby play, as he tried to, you know, basically hobble his way through a game. He finally sat a game out week four, and then wasn't the same throughout the season. And finally, you know, 2 weeks ago, he suffered the injury again. He re-aggravated it, and they just decided to shut him down for the season, hoping he comes back next year and is still able to kind of play back to that level. But it was very clear the injury impacted him, but you're right. I mean, what he does, you know, on the practice field, what he does on game day, he doesn't take a playoff. He doesn't take a snap off of practice. He's like the only defensive lineman who played like every snap for his team last year. I think it was just crazy. It was like 97%, 98%, and he had played 100% in most games. So he doesn't come off the field, and he's got that motor every single time, but they're really missing that right now, especially in the locker room, the leadership, the energy on the practice field, everything he brings. But he just wasn't the same this year, and that's unfortunate that we didn't get to see the full Max Crosby.
Adam, one of the things I get asked a lot about is, what impact will Tom Brady, being one of the minority owners with the Raiders? I know one thing. Mark Davis is one guy. Man, his pop, he didn't take no advice from anybody. He was going to do it his way. So it's kind of a two-part question. What type of impact do you think Brady will have? And is Mark Davis, he's got to be more open than his dad. Because knowing Al, I mean, he's one of these guys, he was going to do it his way. He didn't give a damn what you thought about him one way or another.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Mark has that a little bit in him. He kind of wants that, but he also, he's such a really nice guy. He's a genuine person. And I think what he's also realized is he just wants to win. He wants to make, you know, the memory and the legacy of his dad proud. And it just hasn't worked out, right? So if you have an opportunity to listen to, like, to a guy like Tom Brady, I think you're going to do that. And, you know, he brought him in with the Aces, the WNBA team. I don't think a lot of people pay attention to that. But he came in, and Tom Brady is a part owner there. And, you know, really inspired some of the players. They talk about all the time, just the times he's spoken to them and the times he's been around, what it meant to them. And it's certainly kind of like that on the NFL side. Now, the hang-up is he's still a broadcaster. And there is still, like, this gray area of how much he's actually going to be able to be involved, how much day-to-day he's going to be involved, especially not living in Vegas. But he is going to have an impact on big picture decisions. I think absolutely the coaching decision of if AP comes back and who potentially takes over for him. I would think the GM spot as well. He's going to have an impact on that. And most certainly he's going to decide in a lot of ways who the next quarterback is and come in and work with him. And that's going to be a big part of what he does. And I think Mark Davis is very, very open to hearing that, mostly because he wants to, you know, uphold that legacy of winning, and he just hasn't found that formula to do it. So I think Brady's going to have a big impact until, you know, a big overall impact until he actually moves here and does it day to day, which I think he will eventually do down the road after the broadcasting stuff kind of fades away. And that's going to be his real impact. But for right now, quarterback, coach, GM, I think those are the things he's going to have to say over. And that's why a lot of people thought Shedeur Sanders was targeted for Vegas if they had one of those top two picks, because Tom Brady's first NIL deal he ever signed for his brand was with Shedeur Sanders. He's worked out with Shedeur Sanders in the offseason since high school. Like, that connection was very obvious, and now all of a sudden, looks like Shedeur Sanders is heading for New York.
Now, Adam, when you look on the defensive side, you know, you always look at free agent additions, you look at the draft. How has Christian Wilkins worked out? You know, he's to me, a free agent signing, and obviously coming over from Miami, a six-year veteran out of Clemson. Has he lived up to expectations? And then also maybe the contribution of Tyree Wilson at end. You know, what was your first-round draft pick, I want to say, in 23, out of Texas Tech. Just break those guys down.
Yeah, well, Christian, like Max, got hurt early in the season, and they had to shut him down. So I think that everybody was so excited to see Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins together, and he never got to see it. And Christian Wilkins is back. He's in the locker room. He's around the team. He wants to play these last two games, but there's no way they're going to let him. Coming off, you know, a major surgery and with nothing really to play for. So he's just kind of there being a leader. And I think there's still a lot of excitement next year for Christian Wilkins, Max Crosby playing side by side healthy is going to be a real problem for offenses around the league. But the Raiders never really got to see that this year. And in terms of Tyree Wilson, really interesting story because he didn't get an offseason last year. He was hurt throughout the draft process. He came into training camp, wasn't able to practice. And when he finally got on the field, it was awful. I mean, he was slow off the ball. He didn't react well to the snaps. He was one step behind everybody and just not really generating any kind of pressure at all, not really making impact. This offseason, he got, you know, he really got to work. He worked hard, changed his body a little bit. And I think he's been sporadically impactful. You haven't seen like that dominant game or anything like that from him, but every once in a while he shows up, and that's a positive sign for this team. And especially these last couple weeks, since Max went down, you're seeing a little bit more of an emergence, you know, from Tyree Wilson, who kind of realizes he has to take on the burden himself with no Max out there. And I'll give you another name to watch out for is Calavon Chase, on former first round pick of the Jaguars. He's really bounced around, hasn't really been productive. He was with the Jaguars, signed with the Panthers this year, got cut. He's really coming into his own. You know, four sacks over the last couple of weeks, and just had a really good game against his former team. And he's kind of finally living up to that first round hype that he had in Jacksonville. I think those expectations have been freed a little bit from him. He can just kind of go out and play. And he's kind of been their best defensive player on the line the last couple of weeks.
Adam, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it, you joining us here on Christmas Eve. And Merry Christmas to you, family, everything. And you headed to New Orleans, or are you going to cover things from Vegas?
Yeah, I'll be down there quick, in and out, but then Super Bowl week's what I'm really looking forward to. I can't wait.
There you go.
Yeah, real quick before I go, I was born in Michigan. My dad was a frustrated Lions fan. I was much more of a Michigan Panthers fan.
It's a long history.
Well,
Adam, you know, that's where I got the nickname. It's not a Louisiana thing. I got the nickname Cajun Cannon from a Detroit Free Press writer, Kurt Sylvester, throwing bombs to AC to Anthony Carter.
Now, so, most people would not get that on Football Jeopardy.
No, they think it's a Louisiana thing. I said, no, Cajun up in Michigan and winning the championship. Yeah, though, Michigan Panthers. Like the Lions, they finally got a winner because they'd always bring up Adam, like, oh, Bobby Lane and the Lions in 1958. So, you know, they would bring up, they go, oh, you way better than Gary Danielson or Eric Hipple and all that with the Lions. Well, I remember those early 80s days.
Adam, thanks so much for joining us tonight, bud. Really appreciate it.
All right, Adam.
Thank you, guys.
All righty. Adam Hill covers the Las Vegas Raiders for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We come back, we'll have on with us the publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, Zach Nagy, talking about the bowl game and also transfer portal guys hitting Tiger Town right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Back here on the Second Guest Show, our Christmas Eve version of Second Guest, at the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Mike to tell you along with Cajun Cannon Bobby Hebert, and on our Open Heart Jewelers talking text line, he covers the LSU Tigers for Sports Illustrated, Zach Nagy. Zach, thanks so much for joining us. And normally, this time of the year with a bowl game, even though he didn't make the Final 12, the focus would be on the game itself as LSU will play Baylor New Year's Eve. But now, I guarantee you 99% of the calls we get about LSU, transfer portal. Is LSU going to sign somebody else?
Right, right.
Who else are they going to sign? It goes to show how this ever-changing world of college athletics has hit. And here's the crazier part. They will have a second transfer portal season after the spring. So it's not over yet as far as players are concerned, but the coverage of the first kind of transfer portal run has been unbelievable this year. And it's the first chance, really, we get to see that.
Yeah, look, first of all, Mike, appreciate you guys for having me back on, as always, and Merry Christmas to you guys. But more importantly, this window has been fantastic for LSU. It's treating them right, like you said, and it's about as busy as ever. I mean, you're looking at a window where LSU's already signed 13 players to this class, and it's only been open for 2.5 weeks. And so now we kind of sit back, evaluate, and see where we can go once the college football playoff and stuff wraps up. But like you said, man, it's a time where you're supposed to be sitting back and preparing for the bowl. But more importantly, everybody's sitting back and waiting to see what's going on with this transfer portal nonsense. So it's crazy. It's busy. It's hectic. But you wouldn't want to have it any other way, considering the way that LSU's crushing it.
You know, when you look at the transfer portal, and I'm not talking about the casual donor that supports the university, but I'm talking about an individual that puts up big money, and you never know. It's a crapshoot. I mean, you don't know. You hope the player works out. you could be the top quarterback or any position in the country. Then you reward them, and then let's say they're not successful. I mean, you can't ask for a refund, you know, but then and then all of a sudden the administrator might come back to you and goes, well, I'm not, you know, I don't know about giving you more money in the future. This cat didn't work out. So how do you think that's going to come out? Because you know it's not going to be 100%. Oh, we evaluated the right talent and we paid the right players. Because you know there's going to be chaos in that regard.
Are you lucky to get 50%?
Right.
Lucky to get 50%.
And you know some fans will be like, "What? Well, what are we paying that guy for?"
Yeah, no, Bobby, it's a fantastic question because everybody in their right mind wants to get a return on investment, right? You put forth, let's say, 50, 60K, whatever it is that you're putting in the pot. You want that to come to fruition. You want to kind of get a natty in return, right? You want to get some type of kind of return back. And for LSU, it's a challenging game. It's a tricky game considering how many donors that they have here. I mean, Brian Kelly himself has now put up $1 million of his own dollars in order to rebuild this roster, reconstruct the roster, and help in NIL efforts. So it's a tricky game here. And yes, when you see kind of a team right now that just went 8-4 and donors might have put up money right there and seen kind of a non-LSU standard season, it's challenging. So ultimately it comes down to the point where you really have to continue to evolve as a team, evolve your roster, and get that return on investment in order to continue to get support from this fan base, from the donors, et cetera, in order to continue building year after year. Because as we all know, it's a year-in process. Every December is about as hectic as it gets. So you want to continue to have success so that you can continue to get the support from those donors.
Zach, I'll throw it to the Baylor game now because, man, I watched Baylor early in the season. They were struggling on both sides of the football. And all of a sudden, mid-season, they hit stride. Now, what we think Dave Aranda about, we think about defense. But you know what carried them? Their offense. And they are a very balanced football team. They can run the football well. They throw it extremely well. But this team is known for their offense. Now, they give up a lot of points defensively. LSU's defense better come prepared because they're going to see a kind of two-headed monster here of the ability to run the ball and also to throw it downfield. That Baylor's got some athletes on that team, and that's really as what got them on this winning streak.
Yeah, I want y'all both to explain to me. I was like, I thought LSU would be favored.
No.
Isn't Baylor favored by 2.5 or
exactly.
something like that? I'm like, what?
Because they've seen what I saw.
Oh, okay.
Man, that offensive talent Baylor's got is really, really impressive. Zach, I'll let you tangle with this one.
No, first of all, I completely agree with you, Bobby. I would have sat back and assumed that LSU was going to be the favorite here, just knowing that Garrett Nussmeier is coming back. You got some weapons on offense. Defensively, you're going to have Zy Alexander in the bowl game, Braden Swinson, et cetera. You have a lot of veterans stepping up. And for an LSU team that's kind of riding a little bit of momentum, you would have liked to have seen them be the favorite here. But nonetheless, it is Baylor, like you were saying, around 1.5, 2 points as the favorite. And kind of, Mike, what you were saying as well, that they kind of have a two-headed snake on offense. They're very balanced here. It starts with Bryson Washington on the ground. This is a 1,000-yard rusher. And he's been in the end zone double-digit times as well with 12 touchdowns. So on the ground, they're very physical. Their offensive line allows them to have a balanced attack. And Bryson Washington is a youngster, but, man, he's putting up some truly impressive numbers on the ground in his second year with the program. So it's been a refreshing scene for Dave Aranda and them for their offense to succeed. And it presents a unique challenge for LSU. In the trenches, you're kind of young. You know, Jacoby and Guillory's out for the year with that torn Achilles. You've been relying on Ahmad Bro, Dominic McKinley, a lot of youngsters in the trenches to really step up and make an impact there. So coming into this bowl game, it's all going to be about how can your youngster step up? Can Ahmad Bro, Dominic McKinley end the season on a high note so that they can carry that momentum into the offseason? So like you said, they have a dynamic offense. Obviously, if you were going to sit here and talk to me and ask me, and you're talking about a Dave Aranda team, you fully expect them to be defensive-minded. But it's their offense that makes them so unique. And it's what's got them red hot going into the end of the season. So presents a unique challenge for LSU, one that they have to be prepared for, because when I talk about carrying momentum into the offseason, a win here would jumpstart that to the highest degree.
So, Zach, what you're telling me is if I place a bet to bet the over.
Man, hey, that over, you're sitting at around 59.5 points right now. It's a lot more than I would have expected in this ball game.
Man, that is a lot of points.
But
to think about, LSU's got a lot of problems defensively, and Baylor can score, and Baylor ain't stopped nobody either. I mean, you look at their defense, man, they are shaky in the secondary. If you can protect Nussmeier, and I think that's the key in this game, because you won't have your two tackles, protecting him, man, I think Baylor's going to have a lot of difficulties with the LSU receivers.
Completely agreed here. And I think this is an opportunity for Garrett Nussmeier to step up and really continue carrying his success into this game. We've seen how versatile he is with his weapons. He can spread it out, pass it to a bunch of different guys. I'm excited to see Chris Hilton get in the game here. Let him take the top off the defense, because the Baylor defensive backfield, and I'll put this nicely here, I kind of caught myself before I got too far ahead, but they're not as talented as a lot of those other defenses are in the conference. So for LSU, this is where Garrett Nussmeier can come in, take the top off the defense, utilize the Chris Hilton, utilize some youngsters. I'm excited to see how Kylan Billiott can play in this game. This is a youngster that I'm excited about, and I really think he can take that next step. But what you were saying here, I'm certainly intrigued to see how this offense plays against a rather non-talented defense in Baylor, because I think Garrett Nussmeier can really show some things in this one.
One thing I know where Mr. Billiott grew up.
In Houma, right?
Terrible guy, yeah.
Parish. Now, you know, we talk about the portal and you got to solidify the trenches. What area you think they still have a ways to go? Is it the safety position, or when you look at it, it's not over, obviously, you know, who you're bringing in, all that. But what would you say the most concern you have right now with the portal?
I'm going to give you mine. I think tackle. Okay. I would try to find me an offensive tackle. Safety, I think, would be two. But for me, man, going into this and taking a good look at that offensive line, you want to play an 18-year-old freshman? I mean, I know Will Campbell did it, and Emory did it.
Yeah, but you don't
but
have
not
Will
everybody's
you don't have Will Campbell every year.
No. Zach, I'll let you go with that one.
Yeah, first and foremost for me, it's that safety position. I certainly think there's some room to grow right there. You're sitting with a razor-thin spot. You just switched Javian Toviano to move in as your first-team safety. You have Jordan Gilbert, a youngster, and DeShawn Spears. And, Mike, you and I have talked time and time again about DeShawn Spears, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him take that next step. But you have to have some veterans in the room to go and help him take that next step. So, for me, when you're looking at transfer portal quote-unquote needs, it's certainly at the safety position because you're razor thin. Another spot that I'm going to look at right now is definitely is the offensive line. Mike, you talk about it time and time again. Hey, your second team has to be just about as good as your first team. Injuries happen every year. They come and go. So you have to have defense. You have to have some weapons in there, some depth up front in order to stay consistent in that area. And right now, when you look at the depth in that offensive line room, another spot that's razor thin, you don't have as many veterans. You have your youngsters in Tyree Adams, Weston Davis, Paul Mabanga, even DJ Chester right now is relatively young. So for me, when you're looking at those transfer portal needs, it starts with the safety room and carries into that offensive line room as well. You got to get some depth there in order to have pieces going into the end of the year. It's the SEC. It's the NFL of college football. So you have to have some pieces that are ready towards the end of the season, because players are certainly going to get banged up as the year goes on.
Now, what is your take? We're not even in spring ball. They still have a bowl game to play. But, you know, it's amazing how many fans come up to you. Bob, what do you think about next year? You know what they all say? Well, with Coach Kelly, we better be in the damn playoffs. They're not saying necessarily national championships.
But be in the 12.
But isn't it like almost with Coach Kelly, like playoffs or bust? The natives will be restless if we're not in the postseason next year. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Look, I wholeheartedly agree with that, Bobby. You're looking at a playoff or bust season. You have to be in that 12-team playoff. You're coming off of a year where you were 8-4. You didn't live up to the LSU standard. You signed a really talented high school class in that 2025 class. That helps with the long term. That helps you have players for the long haul. But now you're seeing them attack the transfer portal with force in order to help in the short term. So from a roster reconstruction like perspective, you have the talent. You have the guys that can compete in the SEC and get you over the hump and try to get to do an SEC championship game. But for me, it's all about getting in that college football playoff. I think Brian Kelly knows it. I think the administration knows it. The fan base knows it. You got to take that next step, get over the hump, get into the college football playoff. Brian Kelly doesn't have any more mulligans. You got to come out and you got to hit next season with force. It starts with week one at Clemson, and you have to carry the momentum into the rest of the season. So I wholeheartedly agree that it's a college football playoff or bust season heading into next year.
Zach, I'll let you finish the sentence. LSU beats Baylor, but for what main reason? What's the main reason they would defeat this Baylor team?
Garrett Nussmeier takes the top off the defense and plays a clean game. It starts with Garrett Nussmeier. He's the engine that has this car going. Brian Kelly's talked time and time again that he has the keys to the car. Now it's just for him to steer them in the right direction. And I think if they want to get a bowl game win, get that ninth win of the season, and carry that momentum into the offseason, it starts with Garrett Nussmeier at the helm. I can talk time and time again about the defense and what they need to do there in order to slow down a balanced, dynamic team. That's kind of stating the obvious for me. But when it comes down to it, Garrett Nussmeier truly has to play a clean football game, find his reads, have that processor clicking on all cylinders in order for this team to get over the hump, get a win, and carry that momentum into the offseason, because they need that now more than ever.
Zach, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it. Thank you for joining us on Christmas Eve. Wish you a Merry Christmas, you and the family. And always appreciate you giving us your time, and always great insights, bud. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, you guys. Merry Christmas.
All right. Merry Christmas, Zach.
Zach Nagy, who does a great job covering the LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. We'll be back.
I like that last name, Nagy.
How about that? And Jim, with the Senior Bowl, he got an interview with the Jets as the GM.
Right, Mike, that's how we got to talk about that when we come back from the break. I wanted to talk to you about that.
I kind of got a little bit of insight beforehand that he was going to maybe get that. So, man, I'm thrilled for Jim. We'll be back with more Second Guess right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on the Second Guess Show, Mike Dettelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Abel. We had the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bob, before we ended it, we talked about Jim Nagy getting an opportunity. He interviewed for the general manager's position with the New York Jets. I've been knowing Jim, man, it's well over 15 years.
So he was a scout. How long has he been running the Senior Bowl?
It's like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Because Phil Savage had
before. Right, Phil Savage, and passed the torch.
And he passed it to Jim. And Jim, I think when I first started knowing him, he was a scout with the Seattle Seahawks.
Okay.
At that time. And I know he would love to get that opportunity. Anybody would, to run a football team. I think he probably won't get this job. But the fact that he got an interview, I think is great for Jim. He does as good a job as anybody I've seen handling the Senior Bowl. It has become the place to go. It's not the Hula Bowl in Honolulu. It's not the East-West Shrine Game. Everybody goes to Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama.
The Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
And
you
got a big sponsor to help.
Yeah, you got the big sponsor and the Senior Bowl, Mike. And I think you gave great advice to the LSU receiver who's not playing in the bowl game. I said, he's not playing with his teammates. No, he's thinking of his future. But you know what? You got to go to the Senior Bowl. Okay, yes. You might say, well, no, he should be in the bowl game versus the Senior Bowl. I'm just telling you right now, and I'm talking about from Thibodaux High, Mike.
Kyren Lacy
is that you can only choose one. Do you play in the bowl game, LSU against Baylor, or do you go to the Senior Bowl? I would say, no, go. Don't skip both of them. No, don't do that. Go to the Senior Bowl, and everyone's watching. And, Mike, that's how you draft. That's what I think.
And it's so important, the practice sessions.
Yes, not the game.
The game is one thing, but it's the practice sessions.
And the competition.
That's where Kyren, who's a big, tall, physical receiver, can really excel out there. And he's shifty. Now, again, first time I ever saw Kyren in an athletic event, he was a basketball player. He helped Coach Clark win a state championship in basketball for Thibodaux High School. Kyren really wanted to play basketball, but he figured out there's a lot of 6'1.5", 6'2" guys there, and he played football. He had to get his grades correct, but then, man, we've seen his progression over the last year and a half become a more sure-handed receiver.
More consistent catching the ball, whether it be lack of concentration before. That's what I always tell you, Mike. He runs everything. You got to just finish. He's running a good route. He's a big target.
I told him in the summer, catch the ball. I said, Bobby, give me all kind of crap.
Yes.
Every time you drop the pass.
Because you can do everything right, but you got to catch it. Come on.
The other thing I wanted to bring up, too, is, man, to go to show how the world turns. Who is Sam Darnold's offensive coordinator, quarterback coach with the Vikings? You know?
No, I don't know.
Wes Phillips. The son of Wade Phillips.
I remember him as a little boy in the locker room hanging out in the equipment room.
He was with Sean McVay. He was the tight ends coach, co-offensive coordinator. Then he joins Kevin O'Connell, in Minnesota.
And Kevin O'Connell trusted. That means he knows his stuff.
And so now he's the mentor to Sam Darnold and also the young kid, J.J. McCarthy,
and
Daniel Jones.
Oh, wow.
How about that? Talk about how the world swings around. His dad and his grandpa, defensive-oriented. And the son is now coaching the quarterbacks and an offensive coordinator.
That is a great success story because if you just saw him as a little kid, the snotty nose kid running around, you never think, oh, no, that's going to be a future top NFL coach.
And he may be eventually a head coach.
Whoa, it's crazy how things go around.
And now, how many guys can say my grandpa and my dad was head coach and I'm a head coach too in the NFL?
Right, and then my dad's one of the greatest defensive coordinators in NFL history. Didn't work out as a head coach. But kind of like Vic Fangio, you know, defensive coordinator, whatever Wade Phillips, they always had unbelievable defenses. And everyone in Houston, come on, Bum Phillips, love you, Blue. Love you, Blue, and Earl Campbell and all. Come on.
This is years ago. Joe Clark was good friends with Sid Gilman. And Sid made the comment that, you know who brought the 3-4 defense to the NFL? It had been done in the colleges. Bum. Bum Phillips brought it to the then San Diego Chargers, and then he became a head coach with Houston. The guy before him was Sid, but he said it was Bum.
Because most teams were playing four-down linemen, a 4-3, not a 3-4.
And
the Dome Patrol was the most famous 3-4 defense ever.
That's it. We'll be back to finish it off here on Second Guess right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here on the Second Guest Show, Mike Dettelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, at the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside right here in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. And I want to thank everybody here at the Silver Slipper for great hospitality. Want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. Be safe if you're traveling on the highway. And Bob, last thing, South Carolina quarterback Lenora Sellers has just signed a new NIL deal with the South Carolina Gamecocks. $2.7 million.
Damn, what that means, Nussmeyer's underpaid, right? Right, I mean, because that guy's not an NFL quarterback like Nussmeyer, right?
Man, but can he run?
No, he can run, that's what I'm saying. But
he
was a big difference maker for the Gamecocks.
Finish for us, Bobby.
All right, bon nuit, les gens. Good night, people. Who dat? Go Saints.